I started making plans for this sermon almost a year ago when I saw that our own Unitarian Universalist Association's Beacon Press had published a book titled With Her Fist Raised, Dorothy Pitman Hughes and the Transformative Power of Black Community Activism. It felt both an appropriate topic for this final Sunday in Women's History Month, also kind of bridging us back to February and Black History Month, kind of doing both at once. And the book cover caught my eye because its cover features that famous photo that's on the cover of your Order of Service. The link is in the chat if you to see the Order of Service online. The famous photo of Gloria Steinem, who is white, and Dorothy Pitman Hughes, who is black, standing side by side in solidarity, these icons of the women's movement, both with their fist raised in the Black Power salute. But the book's cover, slightly different from the version you have on your Order of Service, has Gloria Steinem slightly more in shadow, and it has Dorothy Pitman Hughes slightly more in the spotlight. Some rebalancing along those lines is needed. Speaking at least for myself, prior to reading this book, it's just simply true that I knew a lot more about Gloria Steinem than I knew about Dorothy Pitman Hughes. Perhaps that's the case for some of you as well. In contrast, if you did learn a lot about Dorothy Pitman Hughes growing up, that's wonderful, and I'd actually be really interested to hear more about that. But let me give you one recent example of why the opposite has often been more common. Did any of you watch that Hulu miniseries a few years ago called Mrs. America? It was about, kind of about the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. It's really good. It's worth seeing if you haven't watched it. It's a great series in a lot of ways, including a lot of fascinating scenes with Gloria Steinem. But Dorothy Pitman Hughes wasn't in it at all, even though she was a co-founder of Ms. Magazine, along with Gloria Steinem. So I'm grateful for this first full-length biography of this trailblazing black feminist activist whose work made children, race, and welfare rights central to the women's movement. And although I've been planning to preach on this topic this morning for almost a year, it's come to feel even more relevant than I could have known before this week, because it turned out to be the week following the confirmation hearings that may result in Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, who we may come to know as the notorious KGB, KBJ, becoming the first black woman to sit on the Supreme Court. Reading about the life of Dorothy Pitman Hughes, this pathbreaking community organizer, while hearing about Judge Jackson's confirmation hearings, has prompted me to reflect quite a bit about this long arc of social justice. Although there remains a long road ahead of us to build the world we dream about, we're nevertheless raised up on the shoulders of giants who have come before us, and the ripple effects continue to play out in profound ways from generation to generation, often in ways that when you're on this part of the arc, you can't anticipate where it's going to all end up. So before we focus more directly on Dorothy Pitman Hughes, I want to take just a few minutes to step back and consider that long view of creating social justice and change that she was very much a part of. The relative lack of cultural awareness about Dorothy Pitman Hughes renews my appreciation for the importance of nominating Judge Jackson to be the first black woman to sit on the Supreme Court, as well as the recent election of Kamala Harris as the first African-American and first Asian-American vice president. And I bring up those two women in particular because they both did something similar when they were nominated for the respective attention that kind of brought my attention, and it resonated because I noticed it happened both times. That is, they explicitly credited black women who helped pave the road that they are now walking. And in so doing, they really challenged me, and potentially many of us as well, to tell our society's history more broadly and more inclusively. Now, let me tell you what I mean. When Judge Jackson was nominated, she noted that she shares a birthday with the Honorable Constance Baker Motley, the first black woman to be appointed as a federal judge. They were born precisely 49 years apart. What Jackson is poised to accomplish, she owes in part to the tremendous legacy of pathbreaking black women who came before. And here's the thing. I want to be honest with you that there are times when I could have told you who Constance Baker Motley is, and there are times when I would have said, that name sounds familiar, but I can't remember exactly what she did. And part of that is because of the history I learned did not center women like Constance Baker Motley. But I'm grateful to Ketanji Brown Jackson for lifting up Motley's life and legacy and for challenging me, for challenging us to tell our collective history better. And it's beautiful also to notice the ways that Constance Baker Motley, becoming the first Black woman to be appointed as a federal judge, did make it possible for Ketanji Brown Jackson to become the first, we hope, Supreme Court justice, you know, two decades, two generations later, really. The arc of history bends with a frustrating slowness sometimes, but I also find it tremendously hopeful as well to see that it does actually bend over time. Sometimes it really, truly does bend towards justice. And Justice Jackson's invocation of Constance Baker Motley resonated with me for one other reason. It reminded me of Kamala Harris's acceptance speech when she was nominated again to become the first woman, first African-American, and first Asian-American vice president. The part of Kamala Harris's speech that stood out to me most was when she too gave an explicit shout out to Constance Baker Motley. That's what reminded me of it when Ketanji Brown Jackson did it. But she also gave a shout out to five other Black women: Mary Church Terrell, Mary McLeod Bethune, Fannie Lou Hamer, Diane Nash, and Shirley Chisholm. So we're not gonna do this, but if I did a pop quiz and invited you all to like write down what those women are famous for, I bet some of you could name all six, and others of you, like me, might have been like, you know, and Kamala Harris actually said she didn't actually name those women's accomplishments. She just name-checked them. And then she said, quote, "We're not often taught their stories, but as Americans, we all stand on their shoulders." And I think she's right about that. So again, I'll confess that I could tell you off the top of my head when Kamala Harris did that. I was like, okay, I know who that is. I know who that is. And there were others I recognized, but sadly was hazy on the details. You know, for example, Shirley Chisholm. I know Shirley Chisholm. She was an incredible force in politics that some of you may remember. In 1968, she became the first Black woman elected to the United States Congress. She ran under the slogan, "Unbought and Unbossed." She was the first Black candidate for a major party nomination to be president of the United States. Likewise, I know a fair amount about Fannie Lou Hamer and her work for women's rights and for voting rights. Indeed, I almost preached a sermon about her this year, but for some scheduling reasons, it got moved. I will get it back in the queue for next year. Some of those other names I had to look up. As Vice President Harris said, we are not often taught their stories, but we all stand on their shoulders and live in a better society as a result of what they did. Representation matters, and centering a greater diversity of people increases our collective awareness of how to better tell our story in wider and more inclusive ways. And here, too, I want to invite us to notice that arc of the universe bending. It can be, again, infuriatingly slow, but it can also be simultaneously inspiring in the long run to notice that Shirley Chisholm's quixotic run for president, right? People are like, you know, you don't have a chance when she ran in 1972. That helped pave a way for Kamala Harris to be elected as vice president two generations later. So over time, these slow shifting of our societal tectonic plates can create propulsive possibilities. Some of you may remember when Jay-Z said it this way: Rosa Parks sat so that Martin Luther King could walk, and Dr. King walked so that Obama could run, and Obama is running so we all can fly. Now, admittedly, Jay-Z said that in 2008, and we all know that 8 years of the first Black president did not solve racism, right? We know that now, tragically. But as with the examples we've been considering, I want to invite you to consider it may take two generations before we really know the full implications of the first Black president. It may be another 30 or 40 years hence before we really know how those ripple effects played out. So this has been a little bit of a long way around, but it felt important after this week of Judge Jackson's confirmation hearings to trace some of these echoes of influence. But now let me be sure to share with you a few highlights from the inspiring life of Dorothy Pittman Hughes. how she and Gloria Steinem came to be standing together on that stage and all that's happened since, and really continues to happen, because unlike many of the historical figures we explore in various Sunday services, Dorothy Pittman Hughes is still alive. She's, you know, alive today in her mid-80s. She was born in 1938 in a small town in Georgia, south of Atlanta. And part of what opened her imagination, and just like with this song that Danielle played earlier, Pure Imagination, you know, what is it that opened your imagination? Part of what opened her imagination to dream how her life might be different is that her father was a truck driver for the lumber industry. And her father leaving home and driving to these distant states and cities, it just planted the seed in her mind, I don't have to live in this small town forever. I can go out and, you know, take an adventure, take a heroine's journey, like we talked about last week. And she started these adventures earlier. I want you to think, what were you doing at age 11? Well, when she was age 11, she started walking 2 hours round trip to get to the closest NAACP meeting. That's what she was doing at age 11. Interestingly, one of her biggest takeaways from that experience is the prejudice she experienced at that NAACP meeting for coming from a poor working class community. She learned early on of the need to work not only to dismantle racism, but to break down class barriers as well. Dorothy was also a talented singer, and that's what she leveraged a few years after graduating high school. She got in a bus in 1958, traveled to New York City, and cobbled together a very difficult but hardworking life as a live-in domestic worker during the day and a nightclub singer at night. You know, that's how she put together a life in New York. And in 1964, she married a man named Bill Pittman, who was white and Irish. She used to say, 600 years of colonial oppression of the Irish by the British meant he might just be able to understand some of hundreds of years of African-American oppression by whites. And in ways that presaged her work with Gloria Steinem, Dorothy Pittman Hughes tended to emphasize the similarities between herself and Bill as ultimately greater than the differences. More poignantly, she used to say she had no hesitancy whatsoever in using white men to accomplish the Black Revolution. Fair enough. Part of what is most inspirational and practical about her approach to social justice is she's a great model to focus on what you really need and what your neighbors really need. In the mid-60s, she looked around at her life and the lives of her neighbors, and she noticed one glaring need stood out among all the rest, the need for quality childcare. That's what she saw. So she just started going up and down the street, knocking on all the doors of houses that she knew had children and listening to the parents about their lives and what their needs were. And out of those relationships, built through those conversations, birthed the West 80th Street Care Center, which just became this sort of legendary, influential model of doing childcare. More than a thoughtfully run childcare center, which it was, it provided job training for the volunteer mothers who got off welfare and enrolled in college courses in early childhood education and summer jobs for local teens, among many other initiatives. Also, just to give you one other example of the kind of stuff that happened there, Dorothy recruited teens to survey local food costs, and they proved that prices went up just before welfare checks were issued. And a campaign run out of that center brought that practice to an end. And when Gloria Steinem was assigned as a journalist to write an article about that center, that's how she and Dorothy met. Significantly, Dorothy's feminism was not inspired by Simone de Beauvoir's The Second Sex or Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's fine if that's what inspires someone's feminism. That's kind of where Gloria Steinem was coming from. But Dorothy's feminism grew more out of a lived sense of many men ignoring the needs of women. The needs for safety, for food, for shelter, and for childcare. And that's part of what made Gloria and Dorothy such a dynamic and influential pair as they toured around the country, speaking together frequently in public from 1969 to 1973. They brought different but complementary worldviews and experiences to the table. If any of you saw them in person when they toured, I would be interested to hear about it. Dorothy was also extremely helpful to Gloria Steinem early on because Gloria initially did not like public speaking, but Dorothy was an old hand at it. She was a nightclub singer. She had no problem being on stage and behind the microphone. When Dorothy was occasionally questioned about why she, as a Black woman, was spending so much time in a movement that primarily centered the needs of white women, she would say, "I want to be part of a movement that empowers women. Period. That's important to me." On the other hand, she recognized that the relationship she had built with Gloria, it was neither representative nor easily reproduced. On the other hand, Dorothy treasured that her friendship with Gloria was a point of hope that it really was possible to build relationships across racial differences. Relatedly, I love the story that Dorothy's family were members of a very theologically conservative Baptist church in rural Georgia. And despite her commitment to women's liberation, Dorothy would always visit the church whenever she's in town because her family was important to her too. You can see she was really this both-and person. And in the early 1970s, she helped racially integrate that church by bringing the very first white person that had ever crossed the doors of that church. That white person was Gloria Steinem. That must have been quite the Sunday. Dorothy said the congregation, quote, "sort of thought I was crazy. They called me Black Panther," which today, kind of after the movie, is like kind of a compliment. And that's not really how they meant it back then, but there's so much more to the story, including in recent years how Gloria Steinem helped Dorothy's family save their land from an attack by a predatory buyout by a corporation that was not just Dorothy's family, but many of the Black families in this rural county in Georgia. One of the ways they did that was a fundraiser in 2017. Some of you may remember this. There was a famous restaging of that photo that's on the cover of your order of service. You can find this if you Google like restaging of the Gloria Steinem, Dorothy Pittman Hughes photo. Except in this time, they're side by side, they have their fists raised, except this time Gloria is 82 and Dorothy is 79. But it still is an amazing photo and it's powerful to look at side by side. For now, as I move to my conclusion, let me just link back briefly to our service last week on building a new mythology. Some of you may remember that we spent a little time reflecting on Toni Morrison's admonition to dream a little before you think, right? Just like this pure imagination, this Willy Wonka. What would bring me delight in my life right now? Don't just think within received categories and systems and institutions. Dream a little before you think, as Dorothy did with dreaming up and creating that community childcare center, as all of those path-breaking, trailblazing firsts did. They all had to dream a little, not just about what was, but about what might be, and then they turned their dreams into deeds. In that spirit, I want to end with just one more example that might help us just dream a little more about what one day might be. Do I have any Trekkies out there or anybody watching Star Trek Discovery? All right. I won't get too spoilery, but the show is notable for a number of reasons, including casting a Black woman as captain. But the real reason the show is coming to mind is that a recent episode had a surprise cameo of casting Stacey Abrams as the United Earth president. A Black woman as president, not just of the United States, but of the planet. That alone is a beautiful vision in line with the internationalism of our UU6 principle of world community that our youth group spoke about so powerfully a few weeks ago. Inclusive visions of the future can inspire us to dream a little before you think. We are called, after all, not only to be part of better learning to tell our history in broader and more inclusive ways, but also, how are we going to make the history that future generations will inherit? What might we do individually and together whose ripple effects might be not fully felt until two generations hence? We'll explore this idea a little bit more in a few weeks on Earth Day, this idea of how can we be better ancestors? We are someone's ancestors that is coming later. How do we be better ancestors? In 1966, when Constance Baker Motley became the first Black federal judge, you would really have to squint to see that 56 years later, that would help result in Ketanji Brown Jackson becoming the first potentially Black Supreme Court justice. Similarly, in 1972, when Shirley Chisholm became the first Black woman to run for president, you would really have to squint to see that 50 years later, that would be part of Kamala Harris becoming the first Black vice president, the first woman and Asian American. Now, to be honest, I suspect that if Chisholm were alive today, she would not be satisfied with VP. I suspect she'd say, "Wake me up when Stacey Abrams is president." It's this sort of cathedral thinking. We might talk more about this in Earth Day as well. If you go back and look at how some of those medieval cathedrals were built, they took generations. Like, there were people to build those cathedrals. It took people starting it. They died, and other people that were like their children, or even their children's children, to finally finish those cathedrals. That's the kind of work we're called to do. We live in hard and treacherous times, but we can also do what Dorothy Pittman Hughes and so many others did. Just look around and ask, what do I need? What do my neighbors need? And then we'll work to build coalitions across our differences to create a better world. And we cannot know in advance what ripple effects there might be as a result a generation or two hence. But we owe it to future generations and to ourselves to try. In that spirit, let's rise in body or spirit. As you hold in your heart, what do we feel called to do? Let's sing together hymn 1015.